live in Lansing every afternoon with Cheryl Fritz. This is Fritz and Friends on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back to Fritz and Friends. Cheryl Fritz here along with producer Scott Eckersley, 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. Going out on the phone now to Sandra Clark, who's director of the Michigan Historical Center. Good evening, Sandra. How are you?
I'm fine, Cheryl.
You're becoming a regular. I love that.
I like it, too.
Well, very good. There's always so many interesting things going on there. And when I need a basis in history, I need to do some fact-finding, you're the call that I make. A recent article in the newspaper piqued my interest, and so I wanted to get in touch with you to talk about Michigan's role in the Underground Railroad and where we came into that and what kind of role we played in that.
Well, we really played a very important role in it because of our close proximity to Canada. In the early days, people came to Michigan, people who were escaping slavery out of the South, and they were fairly comfortable here. Many of them settled in places like Detroit. But as we got closer and closer to the Civil War, it became more and more dangerous to stay in the United States, so that Detroit River became a real access to freedom.
So people would use the river to escape to Canada?
Right. And it's the legal history is fascinating. First of all, I do have to say there were slaves in Michigan in our early days. Not very many, but we can't say that we never had slavery here. But by the 1830s, when we became a state, we did not have slavery here. We did not have slavery actually as a territory under the Northwest Ordinance. And in the 1830s, a particular escape caused the then Great Britain's colonial government to make the determination that they would not return anybody to the United States under extradition if their punishment in the United States would be worse than their punishment would be in Canada. Canada didn't have slavery. If they returned them to the United States, they would be returned to slavery.
Aha. So we were a stopping point en route to Canada.
Right, because once you got to Canada, unless you had actually committed a crime, if you'd murdered somebody, the Canadians would return you, because then the punishment was the same in both countries. But if your only crime was to have escaped enslavement, they would not return you to the United States.
What area in Michigan, or what areas in Michigan were known to be part of this Underground Railroad?
Well, the whole southern tier of counties in Michigan definitely played a role in the Underground Railroad. And because of the lakes, there isn't as much documented evidence, but it's pretty clear that there were some folks that actually took boats around the lakes and got off at various places in northern Michigan as well. But you have people coming out of Missouri, up through Chicago, some get up as far as Wisconsin, and then coming back down all the way through the southern tier of the counties of Michigan. There's a lot of connections between places like Cass County and northern Kentucky. And so there are people regularly escaping out of northern Kentucky into Cass County. And then, of course, we know Ann Arbor is a hotbed of abolitionism. Mm-hmm. Battle Creek, very important. And then, of course, Detroit is that ultimate place. Down in Adrian, Laura Haviland is a Quaker. The Quakers, or some of the Quakers, they actually, the church split over the issue, but many Quakers really opposed slavery and were very active abolitionists, and were very active in the Underground Railroad. You could be active as an abolitionist and not be active in the Underground Railroad, but many of the Quakers did both. Laura Haviland had the first school in Michigan down in Adrian that admitted both men and women and black and white.
Wow, that's an important piece of history right there.
Yeah.
It's just occurring to me that we might need to back up a bit and talk about why it was called the Underground Railroad.
Well, it was called that because it wasn't known. Because I can't remember who the person was, but someone at one point said that they just seemed to go down the road and then suddenly disappear underground. And, of course, it was not a railroad. It wasn't, you know, a whole series of connected tunnels or something like that, but it was very secret at times. So that you had people who were sometimes escaping people in fairly close pursuit. You had people who would hide them, and those were the conductors on the Underground Railroad, and they would transport them to another safe place on the road to freedom.
And what about the punishment to those who helped, those, you know, the conductors, quote-unquote, that you just called them?
They were violating United States law, and they could be sued for, and this, I hate saying it this way, but under the legal terms, for taking the property, for helping to steal the property of the supposed owners of these people. And so, and that did happen a couple of times in Michigan, more than once. A famous case is in Marshall, Michigan, and the Crosswhite family, this is the mother and father and several children, had escaped from northern Kentucky. They had been living in Marshall for several years, and the people who claimed to be their owners found them, came to take them back into slavery. They filed a complaint of assault, and the folks from Kentucky were stopped for a while, long enough for the Crosswhites to get to Canada. And the folks from Kentucky the next year sued the citizens of Marshall, the white citizens of Marshall. And I should say the people that protected the Crosswhites and stood up for them were both black and white citizens of Marshall. But the Kentuckians sued the white citizens of Marshall for aiding the Crosswhites in their escape. It's kind of, in retrospect, wonderful for historians because this was a federal court suit, and there are all kinds of transcripts of what everybody remembered about that day, mm-hmm. which gives us all different kinds of perspectives on it. But in fact, the citizens of Marshall lost and were fined.
Wow. I find this fascinating. How many, what kind of numbers are we talking about in people that were moved along the Underground Railroad in Michigan?
That is a really hard question to answer.
Because it was secret and underground and nobody was supposed to know.
It was secret and underground, and a lot of the accounts aren't done until well after the fact, after the Civil War. There's a man named Levi Coffin that asked everyone he knew who had been involved to write down their memoirs and things. And so you have numbers anywhere from thousands to 10 to 20,000 that people claim, but it's really hard to say this is to have any confidence in those numbers. But certainly a very significant number of people were coming through Michigan.
Well, and the compelling stories, I imagine, don't end.
No. No, they don't. And I think what's fascinating to me is I grew up knowing that the Underground Railroad was secret and we didn't know much about it because it was all secret. And the longer I work with the Freedom Trail Commission, the more I realize that people who really dig can find out amazing things about the Underground Railroad.
Well, Sandra, once again, you've piqued my interest and curiosity, and I can't thank you enough. And I always look forward to my visits to the Michigan Historical Center. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Very good. Sandra Clark, who is director of the Michigan Historical Center in Lansing. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends after this.